This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel Sensei at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
We have lived by the assumption that what was good for us would be good for the world. And this has been based on an even flimsier assumption that we could know with any certainty what was good for even us. We have fulfilled the danger of this by making our personal pride and greed the standard of our behavior toward the world, to the incalculable disadvantage of the world and every living thing in it. And now, perhaps very close to too late, our great error has become clear. It is not only our own creativity, but our capacity for life that is stifled by our arrogant assumption. The creation itself is stifled. We have been wrong. We must change our lives so that it will be possible to live by the contrary assumption that what is good for the world will be good for us. And that requires that we make the effort to know the world and to learn what is good for it. We must learn to cooperate in its processes and yield to its limits. But even more important, we must learn to acknowledge that the creation is full of mystery. We will never entirely understand it. We must abandon arrogance and stand in awe. We must recover the sense of the majesty of creation and the ability to be worshipful in its presence. For I do not doubt that it is only on the condition of humility and reverence before the world that our species will be able to remain in it. So Barry implores us that we must learn to acknowledge that creation is full of mystery. We will never entirely understand it. We must abandon arrogance, aggression, and stand in awe. Recover the sense of the majesty of creation and the ability to be worshipful in its presence. And that is only on the condition of humility and reverence before the world. We must make an effort to know the world. What is the world? We say the three worlds are nothing but mind, desire, form, and formlessness, which covers everything, and that we each create the entire world. I found this one teaching from the Tendai school that says each moment or in each thought are 3,000 worlds. That every thought we have, if we tried to track it, is connected to so many aspects of our life, including things we might even know are in our life. So how do we meet our condition in its majesty of creation? 3,000, 300,000, 300 million worlds, within worlds, all of it. Can each thought be a question, a wonder? With each question, a wonder, 3,000 more questions, 3,000 more wonders. So I'd like to explore humility and reverence, why these might be beneficial qualities to cultivate, why these might be beneficial things to question, to wonder about. These are qualities of being. Humility and reverence. So we have to work at it, in a sense, cultivate it. What is cultivate? And of course, not everyone regards humility and reverence as a virtue. Perhaps it's only a humble mind that can recognize and feel the effects of its greed, anger, arrogance, ignorance. When we are able to say yes to our greed, anger, and ignorance, we are in a fruitful place to have reverence and respect for the wisdom embedded in these modes of being. So when we say yes, I am greedy, I am angry, I'm ignorant, and we have respect and humility for those things, we can find the wisdom embedded in those modes of being, the karma they carry, and we can atone much more fully. What is important is the practice of living like a question, sitting as a question, knowing our darkness is the best method for dealing with the darkness of other people. Knowing that our light is the best method for lighting up other people. As Berry says, that we make the effort to know the world and then learn what is good for it. So thinking about reverence to revere and humility, reverence might be a feeling or an attitude of deep respect tinged with that awe of not knowing, its mystery, wonder, admiration. Revere said tinged with a little bit of fear. To revere something, it's like we regard it, but it's tinged with a little bit of fear because we actually know we can't know. With respect and affection, perhaps. In the recognition of its ineffable, ungraspable quality. And humility, how does that word live in you? Humility. Not prideful, not unassertive perhaps. Bowing is quite humble. You go down to the ground, your most vulnerable top of your head is, you don't see anyone for a moment, and your head is exposed to the earth. Qualities of being on the ground, matter as matter. So this feeling of awe and wonder tinged with fear on being a body. In the values from BFOD, humility was brought up as recognition of the depth of our own conditioning and the vastness of the path. Recognition of the depth of our own conditioning and the vastness of the path. So fusatsu is often translated as continuous good practice, or to cease from unwholesome actions, where we can actually bear the truth for ourselves. A chance where this world is revealed to our eyes and can be made fresh and new again and strong again by bearing this truth of our actions. It's kind of like we take inventory. So we have this ceremony to approach this mystery. That's what liturgy is. I mean, isn't liturgy just like what is happening in liturgy? Like when you send out for the health and well-being, it is perceived and subtly answered. Like, what's happening there? It's awesome. So in this ceremony, we approach independently and together. And at first, after making offerings and prostrations, we atone for whatever kinds of karma or separation we created. We have each created on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. We renew our vows to not create further harm, further separation at the same time, making the acknowledgement of being one with the qualities of our wisdom and open-heartedness. So this ceremony goes back to the time of the Buddha, and I was trying to find more on that. What were they doing under this full moon with the whole community? And it said that it was a place where you messed up or transgressed was confessed to the community. As a community, each person would bring out where they broke their vows in their actions of body, mouth, and thought by themselves, with everyone. Bring into the light to acknowledge together the wholeness of our humanity. Know how we break harmony, lose respect for ourselves, and to reclaim what we know to be real and true. And we need help with this. We cannot fully see ourselves, so we need the mirrored reflection, which is the center of the Ango chart, from the Sangha and from the creatures of the world, to relearn what is good for the world, to connect back to the thread of continuous good practice. So the ceremony accommodates the shift to not fear what we don't not yet understand. To just go there. To just go there. All evil karma, all harmful actions ever created by me since of old. And karma, we could say, is action, derived from a root word, kur, which means to make or to do. So the main idea behind karma is the relationship between what we choose to do and what we thereby make of ourselves, how we shape ourselves, and how we are shaped by ourselves through action each moment by intention. So when we take responsibility for our unwholesome actions by seeking to understand the unwholesome states that led to them, we are empowered to abandon these, free these inhibiting states. When it comes to the unwholesome actions of others, however, imagining these to result from causes and conditions beyond the individual's control empowers us to respond to these actions with compassion rather than anger. This contributes to our own freedom as well as to the other person's or the society's harmony, which helps promote dharmic qualities in individuals, in all individuals. Fortunately, karma's wide open. It's not fixed. And the force of karma is just as strong in positive, wholesome directions. Happiness generates further happiness for ourselves and others. Care generates further care. Respect generates more reverence and respect. Actions of kindness create greater conditions for goodness to develop. But I think most of us know reverence is an endangered species, an endangered quality. We're a culture that lacks reverence, or perhaps it's changing. It's being recognized. There is that coming in now. I hear it. Maybe you do too. It perhaps means living with the constant conscious awareness that we are always in the presence of an awesome place of abundance, a place where there is fullness and joy, and this is where we are to live as noble, sacred beings. Recognizing that all day long, we are handling sacred meaning, sacred moments, and we have sacred duties. Whatever we are at this moment is a sacred place, is a sacred space. No division of sacred and secular, no special compartments. No rewards for reverence and humility. We each are in the possession of a high calling, a very high calling, one worthy of our reverence. And we flesh out this calling, honoring our harmful actions, atoning. Namo, namo, being at one with these Avalokiteshvara, Manjushri, wisdom, compassion, Samantabhadra, the future Buddha, Namu, be one with the creations, with our creations of separation. So Gatha of Atonement gives us an entry, a track, a path, back into the home we built, so we can pull out the nails and the rafters. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. And many of us need to cultivate self-respect. Esteem our own self-worth and dignity, not from an egotistical perspective, but one as one of the valued sentient beings to bow to be saved, to venerate, and to be treated with respect. How else can we recognize that in another? So to really take that up within ourselves. Do you respect yourself? Somebody asked me today, the other day, do you trust yourself? Would you trust you? It was a good question. How has this felt sense of participation in the universe, of kinship with all those others and with all things we handle, been brought under such question, become so separate? I think it begins when we begin to take things for granted, like we'll have it forever, or it'll just serve us. The moment when we no longer look with the eyes of the young child we were, when we look upon just about anything and still see its rich secrets, its mystery, and feel at home, just not knowing, just being. And this separation can be separation from ourselves and another, with our body, but most of all, or most often, it's the separation between ourself and ourself. I like this Irish writer, John O'Donohue, you may know him. He has a book called Beauty, The Invisible Embrace. And he writes, when we approach with reverence, great things decide to approach us. Our real life comes to the surface, and its light awakens the concealed beauty in things. When we walk on the earth with reverence, beauty will decide to trust us. The rushed heart and the arrogant mind lack the gentleness and patience to enter that embrace. So this approach with reverence, as is this Fusatsu ceremony, and many of the approaches in our training, if you really look at it, all the liturgy is an approach to this reverence. Body practice, art practice, this approach to this mystery tinged with respect, fear of a quality that we don't really know. If we look closely at our entire day from morning to evening, it is just this: creating approaches to generate the qualities of reverence and humility. And of course we know reverence reduces that hostile feeling. We could say it is every action we do. Dogen makes this very clear in his teachings on liturgy, Orioki. Reverence for how many labors it took, that we don't even know the breadth and the vastness of getting that food to our mouth, our hungry lips. We should know how it comes to us. So the rituals build upon this feeling of reverence. It's the approach to birth, to death. Buddha was born, he died, he taught. That's us. We were born. We will die. We eat to stop all evil, to practice good, to save all beings. Approaches to marriage and death. We bow our head in appreciation of the kindness of strangers and everyday generosity. In the Buddhist teaching, there are six kinds of reverence he pointed out. He calls it in Sanskrit, Gauravata, that one should endeavor to develop. He says these forms of respect have practical, positive results in the context of practice, as being a more appreciative person gives rise to positive mind states because the mind can react to the various phenomena that we encounter in both wholesome and unwholesome ways. So the six kinds of reverence Buddha speaks of is reverence for the Shakyamuni Buddha, reverence for the Dharma, reverence for the Sangha, reverence for training, reverence for heedfulness, and reverence for hospitality. The Buddha, the person, an act that acknowledges the depth of gratitude that he discovered and penetrated the way things are, and then shared this knowledge with others. We should know this. Without his realization and offering of the Dharma, there is no us as practitioners. Reverence for the Dharma, the Buddha's teachings, a form of appreciative awareness that develops with time. Cultivating this approach encourages the realization that such knowledge is in all, in us all. And when we are more respectful of the teachings, we are more likely to put them into practice. And of course, it is putting the teachings of the Buddha into practice that we are truly benefited. Reverence for the Sangha, the community of awakening people, ordained or not, as a source of the great inspiration that shows ordinary human beings realize the Buddhist path and its fruits. And there are no spiritual super people. Reverence for training. As we are here to learn to behave in harmonious ways, all coming together with our various helpful and unhelpful habits. How do we guide each other to not create actions that are harmful? How do we help each other to offer that which is conducive not only to our personal development, but also to the benefit of society, mindfulness, meditation, and to have a more stable base from which to grow in wisdom and compassion? In our engagement with things, we can practice to let everything we touch be treated as if it were as precious as what we find most precious. Whenever we handle any equipment or a person, be reverent. Be full of care with everything entrusted to you, everything we touch or see, everyone to whom we have responsibility is to be viewed as something to be cherished. Reverence towards heedfulness. What is that? It's crucial, which is a crucial element practice. It made me think of the evening gatha. Take heed, do not squander your life. Being heedful of the teachings and their application to our lives. Otherwise, we can get caught up in all kinds of unwholesome activities and lose sight of the path. Take heed. And being reverent of hospitality. Cultivate the fact that we can be hospitable. A good host to everyone that comes our way, seeing everyone as our guest to whom we can be generous, giving no fear, sharing the teachings, being reverent towards the hospitable acts of others, towards ourselves, is a positive state of mind as well. When we recognize and welcome the actions of other people, we make that happen in our own inner chamber. If we see fault in ourselves, we'll see fault in the world. The faults we see in the world are stemming from our unloved parts, how we view the skandhas. And can we love the perceived parts we see as faulty? When reverence and humility become central to our experience, if that's the mind we are beholding, it would take such an effort to exploit, to not care for this earth, to stunt each other. It would make it nearly impossible. I'd like to end with a poem called Reverence by Mary Oliver. And I don't know if you know about Mary Oliver. I'm sure you know her as a poet, most of us do. But she grew up in a home where her father sexually abused her, and her mother sided with her husband when Oliver shared her trauma. And as a young girl, she was left to sort things out on her own. And she went and she sought the solace, the comfort of nature in the woods, where she built a world out of words as a refuge from her pain. And she discovered for us and gave to us the beauty and fascination of the natural world as her salvation. So she has a hard-won wisdom. She can write about reverence in a very particular way. Reverence. Truly, we live with mysteries too marvelous to be understood. How grass can be the nourishing in the mouths of lambs. How rivers and stones are forever in allegiance with gravity, while we ourselves dream of rising. How two hands touch and the bonds will never be broken. How people come from delight or the scars of damage to the comfort of a poem. Let me keep my distance always from those who think they have the answers. Let me keep company always with those who say, look, and laugh in astonishment and bow their heads. The name for this laughter and astonishment, this bowing of the head, this way of worship, is reverence.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the monastery store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.